All right, we're taking a look at the brain, the fascinating brain, the brain of teenagers, the brains of senior citizens, the brains of preteens, brains, and taking a look at how we can learn to use our brains to change activity of the brain. Participants were treated with neurofeedback. Now, again, taking a look at these people who are in the study, they were sitting inside of a functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, fMRI, while they were also wearing an electroencephalogram hat, an EEG hat. And they were able to bring the findings of both the results of the fMRI and the results of the EEG to help them pinpoint the precise EEG signature that was corresponding to amygdala activation. And remember, the amygdala has to do with, among other things, what's happening with us emotionally. And it is important for us to remember emotions have a lot to do with our brains, because the emotional responses are triggered by what's going on in the brain. Yes, remember, our guest talked with us about the emotional brain from his book, The Emotional Brain. All right, so after this took place, the fMRI, EEG brought together, and they were able to see the precise EEG signature that corresponded to amygdala activation. The participants were then treated with neurofeedback. And they were treated with the neurofeedback in one of two ways. In one condition, they listened to a sound. In the other condition, they were shown a movie of a person riding a skateboard. But what they did not know was that the loudness of the sound they were hearing, or the speed of the person on the skateboard, was actually determined by the electrical activity going on in their own amygdala. Now, is that sounding fascinating or what? They're listening to sound, and how loud the sound would be was going to be determined by the electroactivity taking place in the listener's amygdala. The group that was watching someone skating on a skateboard, how fast that person would appear to be moving on that skateboard was going to be determined by the electrical activity going on in the amygdala of the person watching the skateboarder. The researchers channeled the measurements coming from the fMRI and the EEG into an audible sound or moving image. The participants were asked to use what the researchers were calling mental strategies to make either the sound grow quieter or the skateboarder go faster. If they succeeded, what they were really doing was tamping down the activity in their amygdala. In a control group, participants were asked to do the same thing, but they were treated with a fake neurofeedback. Unlike the true treatment group, the speed of the skateboard and the level of the sound were unrelated to the amygdala's activity, meaning that when the participants observed a change in the skateboarder's speed or in the sound's volume, they were not altering their brain activity levels directly. Next, people in both groups were asked to look at the faces of happy and sad people with either similar or discordant words above them. Happy face? Okay. Something was going to be written above that happy face, and whatever was written could be happy in nature. Or you could see a happy face and something's written that was sad in nature or angry in nature. Happy and sad faces with either similar or discordant words above them. Past studies have shown that people who are better able to regulate their emotions are quicker to identify a person's facial expression when the word above that person's picture conflicts with the picture. Now, does that come as a surprise to you? We're talking about people regulating their own emotions. But here's the point. Here's the thing. Identifying a person's facial expression You're looking at a person's facial expression. Would you be able to identify that person's facial expression more quickly if something was written above that person's face that tied in with the expression you were seeing? Or would you be quicker to identify the facial expression if something written above that person's face was different from the expression that you saw on the person's face? So, for example, if you saw a happy face, happy facial expression, but above that face, something in writing had to do with sadness, would that help you identify the facial expression as happy more quickly than if you saw a happy face with writing that had to do with happiness? Which of those scenarios would help you identify the facial expression more quickly? To see something happy written above the happy face, or to see something about sadness written above the happy face? And they're saying past studies have shown that people who are better able to regulate their emotions are quicker to identify a person's facial expression when the word above that person's picture conflicts with the picture than can people who have had traumatic stress. So the big comparison for them with regards to these past studies was seeing how a person can look at a facial expression and see a word that is in conflict with that facial expression. Who can identify the facial expression more quickly? A person who is able to regulate their emotions better, or someone who has had some type of traumatic event in their lives that makes it more difficult for them to regulate their own emotions? Isn't it interesting that our emotions can have an impact on how quickly we identify someone else's facial expression? Our own emotional status, our own emotional state can determine whether we move more quickly or more slowly in identifying someone else's facial expression. So the results showed that compared to the people who received the sham treatment, people who were given cues based on activity in the amygdala were better able to reduce activity in that region of the brain. So Dr. Hendler says it really is actually amazing that the plasticity takes place after one or two sessions. Other psychotherapy techniques aimed at treating PTSD or anxiety often take anywhere from 6 to 10 sessions. But she noted that the participants were all healthy. People with traumatic stress could require more sessions to master the method of controlling their mental activity, which to me makes sense. I mean, because you're talking about some trauma that has to make it more tedious, more difficult to regulate anything. Think about people who have been what we used to call shell-shocked after having been in war. And quite naturally, we can expect them to have a more difficult time dealing with a stressful situation, even if the stressful situation is all about sudden noises. We can expect them to have a more difficult time regulating than people who have not been exposed to traumatic events that included sudden and loud noises that were often associated with terrible injuries and or death. All right, I'll be right back.